Deli.
Hey, this is Kimmy with the Metal Deli. What's going on? I recently had the extreme honor of interviewing Sean Peck from Cage, and what a great guy. But the interview, I sound very quiet. And I don't talk quietly, so I kind of was confused as to how that could happen. And the more I thought about it, I'm not quiet. He's just got a loud voice. So I apologize for the difference in volume there. I hope that you can hear me. But what's more important is hearing Sean. He's a great guy. Cage is a great, awesome band. And this interview has lots of music in there. A couple things from Sean that I didn't expect to hear. I hope you enjoy. To hear more of The Metal Deli, you can check it out at themetaldeli.com. Here's the interview with Sean. I hope you enjoy. I hope to hear from you.
A big guy like you, I was surprised with the level, the high level that your voice could get to.
Well, basically, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody else about that because I've had no, real training at all. And I was just a big metal fan with, posters of, Maiden and Priest and all kinds of stuff on my bedroom wall. And I just decided, I'm just going to be a world-class heavy metal singer and kind of just train myself. And, now I've played with some of the bands that I had on my walls, and yeah, I'm still getting better. I think I'm singing probably at the top of my ability right now and always looking for new techniques and new ways to get different voices to come out. So it's been cool.
And do you practice? Aside from with the band, do you practice just your vocals?
Not really. I mean, it's weird, everyone always says, oh, you should give lessons. And, man, I think giving lessons would be real difficult. Like, how do you describe, what's going on in your throat and stuff to someone else and make them do it? So, it's easier for me to sing, with the band than, when we record. I remember on the Hell Destroyer album, I'd have practice, one day and just be wailing. And then I'd go in the studio to record and it was real, twice as difficult. So I was I had a big mental block, I think, that I had to kind of overcome, in that sense. So yeah, I don't really, I don't warm up before, the shows, we play a lot of festivals and we'll be backstage and there'll be all these singers going, and I don't do that. I just step right out and let, the show kind of be the warm up. And I heard that Rob Halford does it that way too. So that's kind of cool to know that I'm in the same company with that technique. But, singing is a trip, it's always, especially trying to sing this stuff, whenever you, got to go out on stage and you're like, okay, are the right sounds going to come out? I mean, you never know what you're going to get, but I've been, pretty lucky of, been able to be pretty consistent live. And I said, a lot of people say we sound better live than on the album because there's just so much more raw fury. And to me, that was always my favorite band. The albums were always killer, but live, it was always at a whole nother level. And we have a pretty big reputation for being a ripping live band.
Evil.
has been together now for quite a while, because you were another band first. You were Nomad, correct?
Yeah, two bands, Nomad and Crusher, broke up and then got this, what is now Cage, formed in 1992, right around there.
And it's been the same lineup ever since? Have you guys gone through...
Well, you know, that's a long time, obviously. So we have three of the five of us are original members. So we've kept the core together for a long time. And Anthony McGinnis, the other guitar player, he's been in almost 10 years now. So four of us, you know, have been together for 10 years. And then we just got our new drummer, Norm Leggio, which he was in a pretty well-known band in Europe in the prog metal circles called Psychotic Waltz. But our drummer before that was like 10 years. So we don't go through a lot of lineup changes, which is nice. And I think that kind of adds to the success and the magic, you know, that we're able to create. So, but now that, Norm is in the band, I mean, every time we've had a member change, it's been like a major upgrade. So, Norm was no exception. He allowed us to really increase the level of speed on this new record.
And you have a lot of other stuff going on. You have three kids. How old are your kids?
22, Corey, he was actually in a pretty radical punk band in town. The 22-year-old was like this amazing musician that just like, oh, I'm going to play the bass. And like within a month, he was just like, like he was amazing. Like it's the natural. He could just pick up any instrument and taught himself. He played drums, everything. And he was in a pretty big punk band around the local San Diego area. I mean, I'd go to some of his shows and there'd just be hundreds of kids just like in insane mosh pits. So, and then, but he's actually now in the army in Missouri. So he went from punk band, out of control kid to combat engineer at the army now. So we just went out and saw him. And then we've got Travis, who is 19. He's a he's pretty much the metalhead of the family. He's into all the screamo and hardcore stuff, and you know, we go to saw Maiden together and stuff like that. And then Lucas is the 16-year-old who is a total freaking ladies man. You know, he's 16, and every like Saturday morning he'll roll around and someone will knock on the door at like 9 in the morning and there'll be like four girls in bikinis going, is Lucas here? So yeah, we're having a good time with that whole thing. It's cool because they bring, you know, they bring their friends over and I get to test out like some of the new music to those different age demographics, you know. So they'll be like, there's just always kids over here hanging out. And they're like, hey, do you got any new Cage songs? So I'm able to, you know, run it by the kids. And we've been playing a lot of all ages shows in Southern California, which has just been great because the 14 to 18-year-olds just go absolutely nuts for the music and the whole, you know, imagery that we put on. And it's cool, you know, like when I'd go pick up like Lucas at school and I'd go to the school and there'd be like kids running around with Cage shirts on. I'm like, yeah, that's sweet.
Do they recognize you?
A couple of them do. You know, I got the little metalhead, you know, crew that will come over to the car and go, hey man, what's up? And you know, they got bands and stuff, and then we played with some of the bands. It was kind of cool, you know, became friends with the families, and there's a real good metal scene out here in San Diego. So yeah, it's like I'm the local godfather of metal, and it keeps you young, man. And it's just like I said, playing these all ages shows, I mean, these kids literally like line the front of the stage. There's just a line of heads banging with giant mops of hair, and it just reminds me of why I got the metal back in that age, you know. And so the stuff that was cool for me back then is still, you know, just as relevant and cool today to the new generation. And that's why everyone asks me, like, you know, how's the metal scene? Is it, you know, what do you think about the whole state of metal? And I think it might be more healthy than ever because these roots are like so deep down, and metal is definitely cool for the kids and stuff. So it's in a healthy place, man. It's been fun being in the band at this time. It's kind of, we almost never play 21 and up clubs anymore. We always make sure the kids can come.
Mm-hmm. And that is very cool because then you're building your fan base that will just keep growing up.
Yeah, I mean, that's
definitely. Says you're an expert snowboarder.
Yeah, you know, I man, I used to snowboard like literally every weekend. I spent a couple seasons back in the day working some ski resorts, Copper Mountain and Vail. And so I got, you know, one year, I think I got like 100 days in 1 year. And so, you know, that'll make you get good pretty quick. And then I just, I became like, as the snowboard parks like developed, I became like the big air guy where I would just like seek out the biggest jumps and the biggest cliff drops I could find. And I won Bear Mountain big air snowboard competition like 2 years in a row. So I used to compete a little bit, and I just like to free ride and like freak people out. Like a Mammoth is a big ski resort out here, and got all kinds of videos and pictures and stuff. And then I had an accident in 99, though. We were skiing out of bounds. So people listening to this, do not ski out of bounds. I used to scoff at that, but I made one fatal mistake under, you know, the blocked off area, and I went off a cliff, you know, like a good 40 feet probably, and there was just nothing but rocks below. So I broke my pelvis, and I've got 6 titanium rods in me now because of that accident. And the funny thing was when I was in the hospital, and, you know, I got Life Flight into Reno, it was gnarly. And I was negotiating, you know, from the hospital bed, our first record contract with Omega Records over in Europe. I mean, the record label from Germany called me up and like, what are you doing snowboarding? This is not for rock stars. You need to stay off the mountain. And I think I was half looped up on whatever pain medication they had me, but negotiated the deal because we had just won the Best New Band of the Year contest with Rock Hard Magazine, which is, you know, like the biggest rock magazine in Germany, and that gave us our break. The winner, the prize of, for that, and that's kind of how the band got started over there, was to play the Dynamo Festival, which was headlined by Metallica that year. I mean, it was humongous festival. And so 2 months after my accident, I mean, which literally I had to learn to walk again. I mean, it took me like 2 weeks just to get to the walker. And then like a week before we went to Holland, I just made it from the walker to the cane. So the doctor said, he goes, you're not going to Holland to play this show. I said, hell yes, I am. So I was able to do the whole show, you know, without the cane. I like walked out there and the adrenaline, you know, hit me. And it was like our first show ever in Europe. And it was definitely memorable because we were playing this giant circus tent, and it started pouring rain right before we played. So everyone just like packed into the tent, and it was huge. So funny how things happen. So I don't snowboard as much anymore, but I still love it, you know, being at the top of the mountain and just hauling ass at like 60 miles an hour. And it's definitely one of the most ultimate expression of your athletic ability that you can find.
One side.
over in Germany? Would you consider is Germany your place, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think, based on this tour we just did in May over there, all around, we had like a real big turnout in Belgium and Holland and Germany, played a big show in Switzerland. So I think that whole area over there is real good for us. That's where we sell probably the most records. But Mexico has been real good to us too, because we're down here in San Diego. I love playing in Mexico. It's one of my favorite places to play. And, but the Europeans, they've got a big foundation of, a system. They've got the metal clubs everywhere and all the metal bands play. And so it's definitely, you got a system of, there's bands, like us touring all the time. So it's definitely a good place to go and tour.
And where are you guys touring now? What is your immediate future going on with the band?
Immediate future. We're playing a benefit for a high school music department around here because, how the budget cuts and stuff. And so we thought we'd help out the music department. So that's kind of cool. It's going to be a big show with a bunch of kids in it. And then there's stuff that's always going on. We might have just contracted to do finally a Texas run. We've got like just people all over Texas have been like, when y'all coming to Dine, Texas? and so that finally looks like it's going to happen. That could be like early December. And then probably going to do another East Coast run. We just got done playing the Prog Power in Atlanta and Tampa and two shows in New York finally. So it looks like we might do another East Coast run. And then we're working on a new record right now. We're working on the DVD right now. And we have the last three albums coming out on vinyl, which we're really excited about. Yeah, it's going to be cool. And then, probably at least two tours a year up next year. So there's massive amounts of planning going on right now. We got, an East Coast manager, a West Coast manager, and it's a lot of good momentum right now. We're probably, we're still definitely an underground band, but, more and more people keep finding out about us, and people are realizing that, in our genre, we're probably one of the top acts in our genre for what we do, and especially when people see us live, like I said, and that's when the jaws drop and they go, holy shit, this is serious. So a lot of good stuff on the horizon.
So growing up in Alaska, is this kind of like, are you like living the dream? Are you still sometimes surprised at how far you've gotten? I mean, from Alaska to, a world traveling band is a big move.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, I was born here in San Diego, and then we moved up to Alaska when I was like third grade, I think. So third grade through high school, I spent in Alaska. I lived right next to Sarah Palin. My buddy just bought Sarah Palin's house on the lake, actually. So that's kind of cool. And I was kind of a late bloomer on metal. I didn't even get into metal until I was like, 16 and a half or so. And which was cool because it's like I got into Judas Priest on the Defenders of the Faith album. And like when you discover a band that you like and you get to go back and like, oh, they got eight other albums, that I haven't heard. It's really awesome to be able to have like this giant amount of material you can go and enjoy. Same thing with kind of like King Diamond. I got in like on the Abigail album, and I got to go back and hear, Fatal Portrait and the two Merciful Fate records. And so the first concert I went to up there was Dio and Dokken on the Tooth and Nail and Last in Line tour. So that was like the first metal experience. I was totally into the Tooth and Nail album at the time. And that was just a great night because we, the show was amazing, and we hooked up with two pretty girls and went to a place called Thunderbird Falls and had our own private little after party. So I'll never forget my first metal night. It encompassed everything that's great about heavy metal. And so after that, it was like, Alaska's kind of a rocking, area up there. They just, there's riverbed parties and they're cranking, Rocky Like a Hurricane out the back of trucks and, all kinds of different metal bands. And even my friend's band Warrior, I remember having, we had the Warrior tape up there. We just played a show up in Phoenix. I'm like, dude, I was rocking your tape when I was 16 up in, Palmer, Alaska. So, It's definitely a, you know, I wouldn't trade my time growing up there for nothing. It was just wild. It was cool. We're actually trying to get up there to play. We've been talking to a couple clubs up there because now, you know, all my high school friends, you know, think I'm some big rock star or stuff. So they're like, you got to come up and play. And like I said, you know, they got a lot of, you know, metal bands that come up there and play. And but yeah, it's been cool. You know, I moved down here to go to college at San Diego State and got into like a cover band. And the cover band was funny because we were playing humongous crowds. I mean, you know, back in when I went to college, it was just raging. I mean, there was just keg parties everywhere, thousands of people. I was in a fraternity that had a party every Friday that had like 30 kegs every Friday in a band. And once we got our band together, I mean, like every other week we were the band playing there. And so I played in front of like some massive crowds, like way early on, you know, when we sucked. And then we started playing this cover band. When we, you know, we got a few original songs together. So we'd mix in kind of the covers and the originals, and we'd play like the local clubs, and we'd play with like some killer bands, like some bands that were like amazingly talented. And we were up there just hacking it, you know, playing like covers of Metallica and stuff. And these other bands hated us so much because we drew like massive people just because we had friends in college and stuff. You know, we had a little network going, and you know, these other bands were looking at us like, God, they suck. Why do all these people come to see it? So I could totally relate with the jealousy. And then I got into Nomad, and the Nomad thing went for a while. But the other, it's kind of like what happened with Cage. We played with Cage, and you know, it was when the grunge thing was taken over and there were no other metal bands really left. So when any like hard rock or metal band came through town, we were one of the only bands, you know, that was comparable to open with. I mean, even a band like, I remember opening for Great White, you know, and they were still drawing like 1,000 or 2,000 people back, you know, in that time. So those were some good shows. And we had to learn early on in our career how to, you know, be a good live act and entertain and capture the people's attention, even though, you know, back then, you know, our songs weren't that good. We weren't that polished at all. But again, we were able to, you know, I worked real hard, and we were able to move a lot of tickets. So that allowed us to open for virtually like every band that came through town. And then I had a whole new slew of bands in town that hated us because we got every opening act. I mean, Iron Maiden, Dio, Dawkins, Judas Priest, I mean, you name it. They came through. It was like opening Cage, and everyone was like, why the hell does Cage get to open all these shows? So we were pretty well hated for a while by the competition just because we got all the shows. But anybody listening out there, you know, that's got a band, that's the whole thing. The promoters, they want you to bring people in. They don't care what you sound like. If you can sell 100 tickets, you will be the opening band. And when another opening band comes through town, they'll call you up first and go, hey, you sold 100 tickets last time. You want to open this show? And that's a good way to work it.
What is, like, are you, you said one of your sons is a metalhead. Are you kind of, do you say to them, this is what you should do? Or do you just kind of step back?
No, I mean, they've, you know, Corey's in the Army. Travis, he's got a giant bass rig, but he kind of just messes around with it. He was in like a reggae band for a while, so he's not like serious about being a musician. So yeah, I just let them do their own thing. And, you know, it's just like anything in the family. They get, you know, they're used to it. Like, well, I'll play some, you know, big show and people be wanting my autograph for like an hour. And they just look at me like, okay, yeah, what's for dinner? You know, they're over the whole thing. They've already seen it. It's like nothing to them. So, yeah, we got a cool, you know, we've got like kind of the house where all the kids come over, and we're right by the beach, and we got a big pool, and there's this, you know, there's always a scene in the backyard, and there's always like metal cranking. And it's fun, man.
From my wounds, now I'm returning to dust. For glory and country, I've given my life. Now I'm just a memory lost, memory lost, memory lost. My last living thoughts, they flash through my mind as I see in the distance a light. I summon my last ounce of strength to cry out, and it's shining so blindingly bright. Lead me to paradise. Hear me, my love, as I call out your name, call out to you for the last time. My solace and comfort in knowing the truth, the truth that this is not goodbye. My heartbeat is fading, and my vision is weak, as I lay amongst bodies that sad. Violence and love are both gifts from above, but war is the folly of man. Oh, shield your eyes from the specter of war. Justice is blind, but not for the specter of war. Tyrannic designs raises the specter of war.
I've been looking. You do a hell of a lot of interviews.
Am I like the spokesperson? Yeah, I guess you know I'm the loudmouth of the operation. I write all the lyrics and do a lot of the themes to the record. So it makes sense that I'll talk about, because we get asked a lot about song content and stuff. And so I'm the one that's got all the talking points loaded up and get those out and try and keep every interview unique. This has been a cool interview because I got to talk. I've talked about a lot of stuff I haven't told anybody else before. So you're doing a real good job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And I guess what surprises me is just the. What genre would you consider yourself of metal?
Well, I mean, we started as just a heavy metal band, instead of being subgenre classified. I grew up on the Metal Masters, the Priest, the Maiden, Wasp, Metal Church, King Diamond, Testament, first two Crimson Glory albums, Good Sabotage, Lizzie Borden, Riot, that kind of stuff is the stuff that really moves me. And so we've kind of just taken an amalgamation of all that stuff and created our own sound, our own vibe. The key is just writing good songs, that are memorable to me. I mean, all of our songs attempt to have a hook of sorts. And so, we've been put in the power metal category just because stuff has gotten faster and there's a lot of wailing, screaming. So there's power metal, there's heavy metal, classic metal, true metal. Those are the, and now, they're saying like speed metal because of this new record. So labels will fit with us.
So you're across the board.
Yeah, across the board, but we're not a screamo band or a death metal band or a black metal band, but we have elements of that stuff that we throw in sometimes. I do my Danny Filth impersonation on some spots, and like I said, it's just as long as the songs are good, the genre is not that important, and that's really our whole focus when we put records together.
So when you're opening, nobody tries to match you to the genre. They just bring you in because you bring in the crowd.
Yeah, I love, like I said, we play all these all-ages shows, and we'll be the only band of our type. There'll be screamo death metal bands, and then we get up there, and we can match the heaviness and the speed of anybody. But then you throw the vocals, and the song structure on top of it, and it's a whole, like I said, we'll play with a bunch of death metal bands and the kids will just be going nuts. And then we show up and do our thing and they're like, holy shit. So it's cool. Cause we stand apart a lot from what's going on, in the local kind of, not local, but in the pot, if you watch Headbangers Ball on MTV, it's all screamo and death metal and stuff.
Right.
And so new metal a little bit. So yeah, we definitely stand apart and we're definitely got, an old school vibe, but, like I said, it is definitely crossed the genre where the kids there'll be kids in there with like Sad Wings of Destiny shirts on, like 13-year-old kids. We're like, where the hell did you get that shirt? Like, I got it on eBay. So I have no problem being matched up. I mean, I'll play with at a reggae show. We've been tested through so many demographics. I mean, I got story after story of us like playing shows at a place where they'll be like, you know, we just did some show in Long Beach and it was like business crowd came in like 60-year-olds, you know, and you would think they would just cringe at it. But I mean, I just threw out some jokes and, you know, did my little, entertaining showmanship up there. And I had them screaming and freaking hollering. And I mean, I remember playing a show at the Del Mar Fair, which is the big fair here in San Diego. And you know, it's all just like family scene. And I mean, I remember this lady, she must've been like 80 in a wheelchair, was just up front. She thought it was the greatest thing she'd ever seen. So, you know, like I said, that's why it goes back. There's two kinds of music, good and bad. And, you know, our music can rock the heaviest death metal kids or, you know, 80-year-old grandmothers in wheelchairs. So it's, we know we got something good going on.
Did you step down and meet the 80-year-old grandmother?
Oh, absolutely. I gave her so much love. She was tickled pink. I think I gave her a CD too.
That's hilarious. And was she totally cool? Like, was she shy? I mean,
no, I mean, she was freaking out. I mean, we just played a show in Belgium where, you know, there's this kid who's like definitely mentally handicapped in a wheelchair, and he was right up front, you know, and he just had the biggest smile on his face. It was the neatest thing. And so I really gave him all kinds of attention during the show. And I mean, this kid was just like, you know, I think he was, you know, like Down syndrome and in a wheelchair, and he just had like the biggest smile on his face the whole time. So it's moments like that that really make it, you know, definitely gratifying. You know, the live performance is a part of the reward for, you know, all the hard work, but also to see, you know, how you affect people and the joy that you bring to them and the excitement, you know, meeting the fans. After every show, we go out and, you know, I'll sign autographs and meet the fans and shake hands and really try to be a band of the people. And that's, to me, that's part of that's almost as much fun as playing on stage.
So as you're on stage, you're watching to see who's most into it, or?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a, you know, a way of like being captivating is really important as a front man. You know, like I said, I watch, you know, Halford and Dickinson and, you know, how they work it, you know, and that's just the way it's supposed to be done as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, there was not a whole, I do crack a lot of jokes on stage, you know, when there's downtime, but during the performance, you know, I got that serious look and, you know, I stare people in the eyes and, you know, no one goes to get a drink. No one goes to the bathroom. No one's looking around at their watch. I mean, you know, we're able to captivate, you know, virtually everybody in that audience for the entire show. And you know, that's not always easy to do. I mean, so many times we've played shows where it's just been like just the deadest vibe in the club or the festival or whatever. And then, you know, we're able to get on and just like spark that magic. I mean, there's so many times like that where we've done it, you know. And one of the shows we've even played in Europe, I mean, we played in this like youth center, and these people would not come down onto the floor. I mean, it was like it was electrified or something. And, you know, and I said, yeah, I go, no matter what happens, man, I'm getting these people down on this floor. By the end of the show, I had them all packed to the front, just going nuts. And I remember there were two bands before us, and the band right before us came back, go, oh, this is the worst crowd I've ever played. They will not clap. They will do nothing. I go, okay, I'm going to get these people going nuts. And so, yeah, that was a very tough crowd, but it's just a good challenge, you know. And like I said, you know, I'm a front man, so you got to have charisma. You got to crack some jokes. You got to make them want to come up there. You got to make them want to rock. You got to make them want to sing, put their fists in the air. And I've got a lot of experience doing that. And it's fun, man. It's fun to really to get the crowd going.
So you mentioned a lot of the West Coast, and you mentioned a lot of the East Coast. You did not mention the Midwest at all. Do you come this way? Do you come to Chicago?
Yeah, we did two shows in Chicago last year, Madison and Minneapolis. We did, I think, a little four-date Midwest run. It's highly likely we'll be back there again. I'm sure, like, maybe not this year, but next year, because we're getting a lot of love out of Chicago. We got a lot of friends in Chicago. and Minneapolis, and now some people wants to play in like North Dakota and stuff. So yeah, it's highly likely we'll do another Midwest run. There's definitely a lot of cool metalheads. We're friends with bands like Sacred Dawn. Those guys are good friends of ours, real cool band. And we got nothing against the Midwest. We love it. We stayed at the place we stayed was Harris. I'm a big gambler, so it was cool to do some shows and then go back to the hotel at the Harris Casino and play craps all night. Play craps all night. It was in Joliet, right, in Chicago area.
Right.
That was rock and roll. That was funny because we were minding our own business and like some guy was like beating up his girlfriend or something and tried to run away and Dave, the big muscle guy, like smashed him into the wall and the cops came and Dave had to be like interrogated and stuff. We're like, Dave, look at your Dave's in jail, but no, he was like the hero who saved the day, and but there was definitely some drama. But I got my poker in, got my craps in, and had a good time.
Well, and I saw that you're some huge poker player.
I mean, I'm not a huge poker player, but I play quite a bit and play a lot of tournaments. I've won some tournaments. It's fun. I played with one day I was at Viejas out here, and I sat at the table, and there was Sully, the singer of Godsmack, was at the table. I guess he's a big poker player too. So we were talking all kinds of metal talk and stuff. And then he goes, "Oh yeah, we're playing tonight." I didn't even know they were playing there, so I went and saw him play. And after I beat him in the one hand that we were involved in, which was cool, so I can say yes,
right.
I crushed Sully on one hand.
Oh,
just tried out for the professional indoor soccer team here in San Diego, and I didn't make it. I'm really pissed about it.
How would that have gone if you had gotten iron and then you travel all the time?
I'm sure it would have been fine. There was only like a 16-game schedule. It's a new pro league. But, I mean, it would have been cool. But we're working on a theme song for the team now instead. They just said I was too out of shape. I'm like, come on, I'm playing goalie. I don't even need to run around. How in shape do I have to be? I had a great tryout, too. I mean, I couldn't have played any better. I freaking pulled off some miracles, and I thought for sure I was going to at least make the farm squad. But I'm on a semi-pro team now that's also a traveling team, so I'll just keep working at it, trying, getting some better shape for the next season.
And so how did it come about that you're going to write their song? Did they say you can't be our goalie, but you could write our song?
It was kind of like a contest they have going. So while I was there trying out, I was talking to, you know, the owner, and I go, hey, man, you know, I'm in a band. He goes, he knew all about me, and he knew that I was in a band. And I'm like, I'm going to put together a song for you. He's like, all right, you know, we'll definitely give it a try. So it's not like guarantee that we're going to be the song, but we worked on it night before last. It's pretty radical. So one way or the other, at least it'll be a bonus track if they don't on something, if they don't take it. But it's pretty cool. So I'm hoping that they like it and it's not too radical for them.
That is very cool. So when you sit down to write a song, you have something in mind? For instance, I'm going to sit down and write this song for the soccer team.
Yeah, you know, now I've been writing kind of different. Now I've been actually writing lyrics, you know, before there's any music, which I never used to do. But I usually try and start, you know, with the hook of the chorus and then build off that, you know, kind of build backwards. I get like the, you know, we're working on a song. The last one I was working on for the new album is called War of the Undead. And so I go, okay, how can I get this chorus together? So I put the chorus together, you get the melody, and then you start building a pre-chorus, and then, you know, you look for a verse, and you got to figure out how to tie them all together. So, you know, we've been doing it for a while, so we've got a good system where I'll come in with, like, one idea, then the guitar players will just jump right on and go, oh, okay, yeah, what about this? And everyone throws their pieces in, and, you know, the magic is created. So it's kind of how we work it. But, yeah, sometimes I go in, you know, definitely with an idea. And sometimes I'll just get a riff in my head, you know, and then I hum a lot of riffs to the guitar players, dun, 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 you know, like that, and they'll translate it. And I write a lot of riffs, too, that way.
And so how often do you guys get together to practice or just run through songs?
Usually, like, you know, 2 to 3 times a week. You know, it's more when we're about to go on tour. It's more when we're, like, heavy in album mode. Right now, we're taking a little break, but, you know, I just click on the Skype on the computer, and Dave's got his Skype up, and we write, you know, via teleconference sometime, even though he's only like 10 miles down the street.
Mm-hmm.
But that's real easy to do. And but yeah, we, you know, we try and definitely stay active.
And who would you say are your favorite listeners? Is it the 60-year-olds, the 14-year-olds? Is it, you know, do people reach out to you a lot? Now, I mean, obviously with MySpace, obviously, you know, things have changed where people can reach out. Are you in charge?
Yeah.
Of, you know, do you get a lot of the letters?
I try and answer everybody, you know, personally on that, and then, you know, our forums on our cageheavymetal.com website. I'm in there a lot, you know, answering everybody, and you know, we've got definitely some hardcore Cage fans. You know, the people that have tattooed the album covers on their arms, or the Cage symbol, or even the one girl put Cage in the back of her neck, and so we've got like some hardcore fans, you know, that think that we are, you know, that love this genre and think that we are, you know, the best in this genre. And so, you know, I've got at least, there's probably, you know, at least 20 like hardcore people that like send me an email like once every 3 or 4 days, you know, that are just like, what's going on with the band? So Twitter's cool with that too, because now we got a Twitter page. And so I'm always updating that, like, truck just broke down outside of Phoenix. Need to fix water pump. So Twitter's cool because I put a lot of that inside stuff on the Twitter page. And, you know, we've been posting up all the podcasts. And, yeah, we just try and, you know, keep it out there. Keep, you know, because I remember when I, you know, that's one thing about Judas Priest, which is kind of my favorite band. I mean, they've got, like, the worst website. It's their website is so weak for such a big band, you know, the interaction, the news. I mean, it's updated like once every 3 months or something. And sorry, Judas Priest, but I have to call you out on that. You need your website updated.
And so, because when I put the interview up, I put it up with songs. So what are your favorite songs? Which songs do you, you know, close the shows with? What are your songs that resonate most with you?
Well, I mean, definitely, you know, in digging the new album. I mean, we write, you know, you hear a lot of bands like, well, we wrote 20 songs and we picked the best, you know, 10. We don't do that. We just write 13 songs and they've got to all be just kick ass, or we, you know, we rewrite them. So we don't have any songs that we like, oh yeah, we got those songs left over. You know, we try and make everything just completely money. So, you know, all this, we get a lot of praise for that, you know, that there's no filler tracks on our records. You know, I love Planet Crusher because it opens up with just massive ferocity. Scarlet Witch goes over great live. Black River Falls is a very King Diamond-y like song, which is, I think that's up for a couple Song of the Year possibility awards. So I like Speed Kills. I love a lot just because that's just a radical thrashing song. It's tough to choose. And then some people say Stranger in Black is their favorite song on the record because that's a different kind of a different vibe. But you're very hard to put me on the spot to say which one I like the best.
Racial, I drop. Then in my rear view, the lights of a cop catch me on.
talking to you. Tell me what websites you have that people should go to find out more about you.
We have cageheavymetal.com, cageheavymetal.com, myspace.com/cageheavymetal, twitter.com/cageheavymetal, and now there's a new one, mycontent.com/cage, which is going to be a pretty big site where we're going to be posting a lot of videos and insider stuff, mycontent.com/cage. So the main website is cageheavymetal.com. So we look forward to hearing from everybody on one of those sites.